The buzzer have been poured on its way. Oh, oh my goodness. Oh.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. We're talking ball. We haven't been with you for a while, and a lot of stuff's gone on. We've been all over the place. We got a little FBI thing going on, so we're going to catch you up from kind of since the Bahamas, and Dan and I's absolutely brilliant broadcast of the Kentucky Wildcats' first games of the season, basically. So, D-Square.
Yes, sir.
It's been a while. What have you been up to besides, I know you have your own podcast, you and the lovely Lee Ross, who I was actually a guest on the other day, but let's talk hoop. What have you been up to?
All right, I've been up to a number of things. Strictly from hoop standpoint, Seth, I must say this as we get going. I had an absolute blast at the Big Ten Media Day. You know what? I was thinking about this. We do a segment, and I know you did it as well, Fast Break with players and coaches, and the coaches in the Big Ten are so cool. Like, Izzo and I are supposedly feuding or whatever. A great time with Tom. Fran McCaffrey, great time. The players, awesome. I've got to say that because so often what we're reading now is crapola, all the crapola in college basketball, but that's only a few people. I mean, it's only some programs. It's not everybody. And the guys that I dealt with yesterday, Seth, were so much freaking fun and so willing to kind of go outside the box that I wish we could celebrate that more than we celebrate, you know, this slap from Adidas or Nike is giving this much money to this idiot assistant coach, and this coach, Hall of Fame coach, is dumbfounded by, you know, basically everything that ever happened in his life. I mean, there's so many great stories in college hoops. That's what I've been doing, learning about the great stories in college hoops.
So. All right, who had the best? I know, hey, the fast break, basically fast break for the listeners. And if we don't hear sound like we normally do, I'm not in the studio today. But like, you know, give an idea. Like, so the fast break, you ask them, like, you know, what's on your iPad? You know, what do you listen to on the way into to work? You know, what's your favorite ice cream? Or where's your player favorite place to eat on campus? Or you know, maybe some player does an impression of a coach. Who were the one or two funniest dudes or coaches or players you dealt with?
I'm telling you, Tyler Cook from Iowa was awesome. Like, just awesome. And he did an imitation of Fran McCaffrey that just screaming. You know, he couldn't get the red Fran. He couldn't get the DEFCON 8 or FranCon 8. But he was just so freaking fantastic. And I love Cassius Winston. I think Cassius Winston is going to end up being a player of the year in the Big Ten this year. And I love that kid. Got into Harvard. So I have a stepdaughter at Harvard. We were talking about, you know, the hardest thing at Harvard is getting in. Just fantastic, funny guys. I loved him. Juwan Morgan from Indiana, absolutely great, man. Just, you know what? Just guys coming, as you said, you're asking all these questions that are so dumb, but they get into them. The coaches got into them. Like, Tim Miles was actually, like, felt like he was under pressure with this swish or brick thing where you ask him rapid fire. You know, it was just great. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself two things. Number one, the old guard of Bob Knight would have been like, I'm not doing this crap. And Izzo, great. But what do? You leave your house or you leave the place. I jumped in the car with my wife, start driving back home. You start reading the trial, and that's what people see, the trial. And Seth, it's just unfortunate. I don't know how you feel. It's just unfortunate because you've been at Kentucky. You've read at Auburn. Now, just great stories and great kids in college hoops, man.
We're talking about practice.
Yes, sir.
I've been to Virginia. Obviously it's fun watching them practice. They got a chance to have a really good team. DeAndre Hunter's really good, but you said something. Great kids, coachable, listen, hear, want to please, attentive, focused. Then I actually went over to Tennessee, the Tennessee kids, the work ethic, Rick Barnes coaching them hard, them listening, them trying to, you know, compete, trying to understand that they're the hunted as opposed to the hunter, and that, you know, all of a sudden, they've got to find a balance. Cause, you know, let's face it, when you get upperclassmen, like you got a guy like Schofield, or you got a guy like Grant Williams, you know, Grant Williams wants his, he was the player of the year last year in the SEC. Yet I'm sure he's got a bunch of people chirping in his ear. He's got to show people he can shoot threes and do this and do that. And, you know, in fact, Rick asked me to talk to him. I said, Grant, remember you were the player of the year in the SEC last year. You know, that's who you are. That's what makes Tennessee tough. Is because you guys play differently. You're physical. You're aggressive. You punch people right in the mouth, and just a great practice, a great spirit. I got a chance to see their new locker room, which is absolutely incredible. Surely not being exploited. I can tell you that much with that locker room. Had lunch with him. Unbelievable catered meal there. It was an absolute blast. I mean, it was terrific. Then drove over to Kentucky for the pro day, and you know, being back with those kids after the Bahamas. You know, they're just a genuine group of kids that continue to work hard, to continue to compete against each other. EJ Montgomery did practice, and he looked like Tayshaun Prince to me, actually. You know, again, not maybe where they want to be, but trying to figure it out. John's still trying to figure out his team, but they were unselfish and they played hard. And then, you know, I've been over here at Auburn and watched their pro day yesterday, and you know, the master of the Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, and my man Bruce Pearl was doing his thing, and they've got amazing kids. I mean, just amazing kids. And Afferty McLemore, who had that horrific accident last year, missed the last 4 or 5 games, he's 100% healthy and with a smile on his face, appreciating a chance to play. So I've had a blast. Then I spoke at Norfolk State's tip-off banquet, and they've got a good basketball team with had 350 people there, and the kids were a blast and really, really committed. And it just shows there are so many good kids playing college basketball that are competing, that care about each other, that care about, you know, winning, and that want to have a good college experience. And man, the game and the kids, it's great.
It's awesome. You know, the Big Ten, I'll say this. You mentioned Iowa, and you have mentioned Iowa. You know, Michigan State's going to be really good. And I think Cassius Winston or Nick Ward, one of the two, is going to be player of the year. Indiana's going to be really good. Tell me whatever you want. Indiana's going to be really, really good. Two teams real quick. Minnesota, do not sleep on Minnesota.
I agree.
Do not sleep on Iowa. And there's a couple teams that you're not going to know. But in talking to Richard Pitino, man, he's really excited about Eric Curry. Really, Amir Coffey's a really good player and was getting much better. Jordan Murphy is a double-double machine. If they are 7th, 8th, 9th, wherever they're picked, then two things are going to happen. One, Richard's going to be out. And two, they will have massively either gotten injured or underachieved because they have a lot of guys. Anyway, but
how is the guard play?
I don't know.
Minnesota. I mean,
I'm not even sure I know any of their guards, if you want to know the truth. I mean, they don't have... let's put it this way, Seth. They don't have anybody that you're going to say, hey, man, you know, this kid's going to be really good. Let me preface this. Like, in the Big Ten, okay, I'm going to say Devontae Green's going to be really good at Indiana. Like, he showed flashes last year, and he's going to be one of those kids, along with Nick Ward, that surprises everybody, and you go, damn. Okay, C.J. Jackson is going to be really, really good. But when I look at Minnesota, I don't know what Jameer Harris is going to be. You know, he's supposed to be good. Okay, great. Or Marcus Carr. You're talking about two freshmen coming into the program on a team where they just don't have any experience there. So they're just guys. Let me put you this way. I saw Devontae Green for Indiana go get like 25, all right, in a couple of games, like 20. You know, I've seen those guys do that. I think this Nojel Eastern's going to be really good at Purdue, not necessarily as a distributor, but he's going to have put up big numbers. He's got that kind of thing. I don't know that there's anybody at Minnesota. If I were a guard at Minnesota, I would make sure everybody up front got theirs, and then Richard Pitino would have to play me. But anyway, my point is, there's a lot of unknowns in the Big Ten, but just being around them, man, there's an energy to those teams when you talk to the coach off to the side and you get the real deal. And I do think this. I think Purdue is becoming – and Matt Painter, who had a great week, by the way. He got married last Friday, got an extension announced today. So he's had a hell of a week. I think he's becoming like the Bull Ryan. You could put them in, you know, first through three or first through four every year. I kind of think that. And I think that, speaking of Bull Ryan, I think Wisconsin with Ethan Happ back, Davidson back, they love Kobe King. I don't know what Illinois is going to do with eight new guys. Rutgers says they're better. I don't know, but I think it's going to be a fun year. And I swear to God, Seth, I keep coming back to this, man. What a great group of coaches and what a great group of kids.
Yeah, and that's what we've got to celebrate. We got to celebrate the game. I mean, I think that's so important. I mean, you know, you and I know, like, you know, just watching coaches coach in practice and then watching players respond this time of the year. You know, this is a great time of the year for a coach. You haven't played a game yet. You know, it's kind of just you and your team. Yeah, you have media day and everyone's upbeat. You're going to have, you know, midnight madness maybe, or you're going to have a blue-white scrimmage, or you're going to have, you know, an exhibition game. But is there any better time of the year?
No.
Then when you're just, like, people don't understand, when, you know, you got your guys, even though you've had them in the summer and you had them preseason, but when you kick it in for real and, you know, you have a plan, you've worked on this plan, you're implementing it, you know, it might change, but the raw energy and that's why you coach. I mean, to walk in the gym and say, all right, we're at point A, we're trying to get to, you know, here are the steps, and seeing guys buy in and seeing, you know, walking in the locker room after practice and guys all have smiles on their faces because, you know, they're taking another step forward. Like watching Auburn yesterday after this pro day was over, and it was just a normal practice. It wasn't anything more than that. But, you know, there were 28 teams there. I mean, it was a great turnout. Seeing the kids interact with each other, seeing some of their families came in to watch the pro day, seeing them walk over to all the NBA guys and introduce themselves. Talking to the different players, like talking to Anthony McLemore and having him, you know, him say, you know, I didn't know if I'd ever play again. I mean, his leg was sideways. And, you know, seeing the joy in his face, seeing under-recruited guys like, you know, Bryce Brown and Jared Harper, and seeing, you know, how good they are, that, you know, there are good guys out there. So, you know, watching the different coaches do what they do and the relationship that the coaches have with the players, I mean, it's a blast, and you know, it's something that people just don't understand. It's really maybe the most invigorating time of the year for a coach, don't you think?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, you make it sound great. I don't know.
I like practice.
Yeah.
I mean, I like practice.
I do too. Everybody
you make
likes
your guys practice.
Practice
at midnight, you know?
Yeah.
Who wanted to go to practice with you?
Nobody did. No, I was. If I had a good team, I wasn't. But in those days, I was trying to piece together walk-ons to beat you. So, I mean, I'm like, I got to be grunt. Yeah, I guess. It all sounds good. But then reality comes in and,
good job if you didn't have to coach games.
Yeah, then, you know, some D-bag comes in. I will say this as an advice to coaches, never take walk-ons. The great Bob Knight told me that a long time ago, never take walk-ons. Your biggest pains in the ass are walk-ons. But I agree with you. It is a really fun time of year. It is, because you haven't lost. You're getting ready for the season. You're seeing how you're doing.
How about Bruce Pearl? Bruce Pearl has the great team. It's a team of eight walk-ons. They do everything in the practice. And then, you know, when they're called upon to, you know, be offensive guys in shell or whatever. And I actually interviewed one of the kids yesterday. And those guys, it's like they're just part of the team. And they're, you know, Auburn, they're just so excited to, you know, be with Auburn. They get practice gear. They're a priest. But here's the deal. Those walk-ons never suit up, so they, you know, it's not like,
right.
You know, some walk-ons, eventually, they expect to play. They're no different. They think they're going to be pros.
Seth, when we had, I don't know how many pros we had at Indiana in the 90s. We had six, at least. Player of the year, Calvert Chaney. Greg Graham, first-round pick. Alan Henderson, first-round pick. Eric Anderson, second-round pick. Damon Bailey. Brian Evans, first-round. I mean, we had a million guys. We had this walk-on kid named Mike DeLuzio. We're like,
you're just calling him right out. Mike is getting
I'll call him out. I'll call Mike out every time, because his dumb comes in, knocks on the door, and asks Coach Knight and I why he's not playing, because he's playing really well in practice. Coach Knight took the old VHS recorder that would be next to his chair and fired it against the wall. and proceeded to list Seth. My man, why aren't you playing? Well, let's see. Greg Graham's a first-round pick. Damon Bailey's a first-round pick. Calvert Chaney's a first-round pick. Eric Anderson's a first-round pick. Alan Henderson's a first-round pick. Why aren't you playing? Hey, man. My man.
Was he an ex-walk on after that meeting?
He had to fight really hard to get back on the team. And we had this other kid named Matt Nover. Now, I love Matt Nover. Matt Nover was Ricky Rowe in the movie Blue Chips. He's great. And Matt was always saying to me, man, DeLuzio can really play. I'm like, Matt, what Bruce has is the equivalent to the boys team
exactly.
that plays against the women's programs in women's college hoops. And it's a great
100%.
Idea. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's really smart.
Now, that's as opposed to Virginia that has 100 managers. And what they do with their managers, this is great. This was unbelievable. They all have these extended padded arms.
Yeah, that's
so
big now.
They're almost like cartoon characters. I mean, like, you know, they're like walking pads. They have, and they're about 8 feet long. And instead of, and what they do is, and they have two of them. So when they play defense or working against pressure or whatever, these padded managers run around and like put guys in vices. They wrap these pads around them. They hit them and they run around and guard and. Even if they can't play, they got the 8 foot pads, so they're always kind of whacking guys in the head and the body. And I mean, it's unbelievable. It's almost like as someone would create a superhero.
Yeah.
You know, little orange, you know, practice gear, manager practice gear, and these blue padded arms that are absolutely smacking the hell out of every player that makes a cut or tries to get open.
Yeah.
It was the greatest.
I watched the great Andrew Dockage at practice last Saturday. I went to Ohio State's practice, and he's out there coaching it. He's got those padded arms. I'm like, what the hell are those? Just smacking people. Just smacking the hell out of people. I didn't have the pad. Man. They got, like, the same thing. Ohio State, like, three guys, managers with these things, and – you know, Andrew told me after, he goes, Dad, man, these things get kind of tiring. You know,
just, right? I got to believe
it. Whacking guys.
I want to do a piece for something. I want to get some padded arms and walk around sports centers.
Smacking people. Smack Billis, smack Williams, just smack, you know, Reese. Just, hey, that's a dumb statement. Whack, smack him with the padded arm. Yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable. But it's a good time of the year. Looking forward, I got a couple more. I'm going to go see the ACC group when I go to ACC Media Day, and that'll be fun. I'm going to go see the Ole Miss when I see my man Kermit Davis to do a little tip-off banquet talk. So, you know, life is good. This is a good time of the year. Let me ask you this just in terms of teams. You know, we all do, you know, trying to check things out. Do you think what teams, right? So you think Michigan State's going to be really good?
In the Big Ten. I think Michigan State is.
You like Indiana.
I do.
All right. So you like Purdue because you tell me they're going to be in the top four.
Yeah, I don't love them. I just think they're going to – Mackey has become one of the most difficult places. They're not going to lose two games. I mean, two games at most in there all year. So that leads to a pretty good record.
What about Maryland? I mean, because – you look at this team, and Fernando's pretty good, and Cowan's pretty good, and Marcella looked like he had a chance to be a good player. They signed a really good, you know, have a really good freshman big. I mean, you know, are they a team that, you know,
it's Jalen funny. Smith? Yeah, Jalen Smith, the guys that you just mentioned, particularly Fernando and Jalen Smith, I was talking to Anthony Cowan yesterday, who I think is one of the real winners in college basketball. Like, if you're going to say to me, all right, who do you want shooting free throws at the end of the game? I'm going to tell you, he's on my list of guys. He's just a winning dude. But he mentioned those guys, particularly Smith and Fernando. He said, Fernando has gotten even stronger. He's like, you can't, like, some days you can't handle him. Some days he gets on the block and you just cannot handle him. So I don't know. They are one of the real unknowns. They, you know, Herter left, and I don't think anybody really expected that going into last year. Justin Smith, maybe, but then he got hurt. I don't know. They, to me, are a little bit – I watched Ohio State, and I still don't know. I haven't seen Maryland yet. I'm looking forward to seeing them, but – The guys that you mentioned are the exact guys, and the look on Anthony Collins' face and Anthony Collins' expression was he thinks they're going to be much better than people anticipate. But he also said, man, wouldn't it be nice if we had those guys with Herter and Justin Smith here? He said we could be top five in the country. So,
I think that's the hardest thing for like teams at that level.
Yes.
That, you know, like Cal can reinvent his team year to year. When you're not expecting guys to leave, I think it's hard to reinvent your team. And they were fortunate to Fernando State.
I don't know if he'd have left, but ultimately, but he could have. You know what I mean? He's the look, right?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. So, all right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little. Unfortunately, we're going to get away from hoops, or kind of get away from hoops. We're going to talk a little bit of the FBI investigation, and it's something that unfortunately could have a major impact on teams, players, and coaches. When we come back, we'll talk to the FBI. D-Square.
Yo.
FBI inquiry, whether it's a federal offense or not. Obviously, there's a lot of things that have gone on that are NCAA violations. Now that you've got to be able to prove them, obviously you can't just make accusations. You've got to back up those accusations. But when I say FBI investigations and everything you've read so far, because we're not there, we're spectators just like the rest of the world. What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Yeah, I'm kind of sad. You know, that's kind of the first thing, Seth. I mean, I know you're friends with Jim Gatto, and I'm reading this, and I'm not going to lie to you. Everybody in college basketball says everybody knows that everybody's cheating and that this went out. I think I've been around college basketball fairly closely since 1980 and 81. I didn't know this was going on. I didn't.
Oh, you're right.
I'm sorry. I may be naive, and you can call me stupid or whatever you want to call me, but I had no idea. I wondered why, and I'm going back in the day, and now that I've seen the name Spies AAU come up, I wondered why we couldn't get involved with a couple of kids back in the day, that played for Spies, and you realize now there were payments, and Coach and I wasn't going to do that. But it's like I did not know this. I did not know, again, your guy Gatto or the Black Ops or,
crazy.
And
How about it had a name?
What's that?
How about it had a name?
It had a name. Black Ops. Yeah. I mean,
I thought it was SWAT or something.
Yeah. It's like, man, you're telling me two things have to happen here. There has to be a market. Like Adidas can say we're going to pay people, but there has to be a market. And clearly there's a market for players. I mean, Bowen's dad spelled out that he was certainly up for sale, as was the kid, in his work. But there also has to be a market from coaches. And here's where I'm going to ask you for your expertise. We see names of schools. Like, Kenny Johnson, to me, should be fired immediately. I don't know what Bill Bradshaw is waiting, the AD at LaSalle, but fine. We see the name of schools, okay? The problem that I have, and I'm curious your take on this, I can be recruiting Jim Smith. Adidas, and I'm an Adidas school, Adidas can pay Jim Smith without me knowing as a coach that Adidas is doing that because they know I'm recruiting. Is that naive on my part to think that it's possible that coaches didn't know these payments were going on, Seth? Or was it these shoe companies knew that the coaches wanted this done? Does it make sense, my question to you?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. First of all, let's face it, why is Adidas? We say Adidas, but I mean, let's face it.
Whatever.
Let's not be naive to think. It's not rampant amongst the all the shoe companies. I'm not saying it is, but let's not be naive and say it's not possible.
Let's just say shoe company instead
shoe
of
companies
Adidas.
In general.
Yeah.
I think that, obviously if guys know who guys are recruiting, why do shoe companies give universities millions of dollars? They give universities billions of dollars because that's cheap in relation to the exposure they're getting off of that investment. Let's face it. You get a team to the Final Four, the Elite Eight, the Sweet 16, the number of games that are on television, the visibility of those logos, the millions of dollars that they're paying out. pales compared to what they would have had to spend in advertising money. You think about what does someone pay for a sign in at Yankee Stadium or at Indiana or whatever to have that thing there every single day in a prominent place where people can see it. A lot of money. So, I mean, that's why they're doing it. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to get their teams as good as possible. And that's what the shoe companies are doing. They're trying to load up their teams with quality. That's why they do grassroots basketball, maybe to identify players and brand loyalty, but also to develop relationships to hopefully get kids to their schools. I was blown away. And I'm with you. I'm the most naive dude in the world. I was blown away by the thought and the amounts of money that people are talking about to get guys to play for an AAU team, to get guys to go to specific schools. But I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to say, yeah, that's going on, and here's and there's a market there. And, yeah, do I think that some way, somehow, coaches kind of have an understanding of what's going on? Yes. Do they have an understanding of the amounts of money? No, because I can't even fathom the amounts of money. I really can't. I can't fathom the amounts of money. But here's my say. Parents have made a comeback. And what I mean by that is we hear so much conversation about the players being exploited. We hear so much conversation that the guys need to get paid. We hear so much conversation that, you know, well, the coaches are making millions of dollars, but, you know, the players aren't getting anything, which is really not true. Could we do certain ways legally and whatever? Could we do more? Sure. And I have a couple of ways that we could do it. That I think what happens is the parents and everyone involved in the process, all the players per se, basically say, yeah, that's right. And that has created – there's always been a market. Look, there's always been cheating going on, you know, whether it used to be a car or a refrigerator or, you know. But I think this market – because when you talk about $150,000, that's $2.25 before taxes. That's a lot of money. How many guys can you do that for? Like, how many guys could get $100,000 here? I mean, how much money is out there, I think, is the question. But don't you think that in a lot of ways – the parents and the players surrounding the game are more apt to say, I want like the Bowens dad. I mean, like he was pimping his own son basically, but he had no fear in asking for large sums of money. And that dude isn't even that good. Does that make any sense? I mean, what I said?
It does, but it does. And yeah, but my thing is if there is no, you know, if we dealt with things with a little integrity, there wouldn't even be a market. You couldn't even ask. Where would you ask? Like, who would you ask?
Well, like, they're going to ask the shoe company.
Right, but
recruited.
I know this. I know, Seth, but I'm just saying.
I'm talking about in high school to be recruited to AAU teams.
Seth, I got recruited to go to high school in eighth grade.
My dad got
offered jobs and apartment to stay in Marion, Indiana, and Highland, Indiana, in eighth grade.
You were that good.
But so anyway, at the end of the day, if these shoe everybody tells Jim Gatto's the greatest guy. No, he's not. He's buying kids. I mean, this guy Gracia, he's buying kids. I mean, if these guys if these guys weren't buying kids, if there was no market, when Michael Jordan came out, he took meetings with every shoe company. All right. Now the meetings are in eighth grade. Now the meetings are clandestine. Now the meetings put kids ineligible. If these guys were all just people of integrity, this wouldn't be an issue. But it just goes back to my initial point in college sports, Seth. Hire people of integrity and fire those that cheat. That's it. Because most of these slaps that coach college basketball couldn't make a dime doing anything else. I mean, let's be honest. So, but they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars because what? They can talk to a kid into coming to a school, or they got a connection to, I hate to keep using the guy, you know, Gatto, but he's the only name I know off the top of my head. I don't know. It's like, when did we start this becoming a guy in his junior year when he commits taking meetings with shoe companies to guys meeting in front of gas stations for crying out loud to give them $100,000 or whatever the hell some shoe company gave them.
Yeah, I think the shoe company thing is new, but I mean, let's face it. I mean, we've had scandal in college basketball forever and ever. I mean, whether it was back way, way back in games being fixed, whether it was, there have been shoe wars per se going on for a long time. I mean, there's always been, recruiting's about who's working for you when you're not there. So, I mean, the question, I guess, to answer your original question is, every school wants someone at worst to be neutral, but at best to be working for them. And what's happened, I think, is now the shoe companies have been the guy that's working for you when you're not there. Does that make any sense?
It does. But let's just evaluate this particular trial, Seth. We've got fake affairs because Billy Preston's mother, who was
another guy who can't play.
Do you remember when his mother, this Nicole Player, came out with such angst over the NCAA and they didn't let her son play? Cripe! She's having a fake affair, so she can dupe. Freaking Kansas. They said Billy Preston's great grandmother drove a Dodge Charger. Hey, look, I got the hippest family. Yeah, she's dead. She's dead. That's the absurdity of Kenny Johnson. Kenny Johnson, I was talking to a Big Ten coach yesterday, wanted to get hired. Looked this coach dead in the eye, had all this fake or whatever documentation that he did nothing. Now it's in federal court, time, date, place, where he gave money to a recruit's dad. I mean, we've got $300,000 expense accounts. So we've got fake affairs, great-grandmothers that are dead driving Chargers. If you know what a Charger is, it's like
a souped-up car, right?
Yes! It's like the world's fastest. We got black ops in a multi-billion-dollar shoe company to go get 12-year-olds. And we've got $300,000 expense accounts where some clown in a black ops thing spends $300,000 on travel. This Gasnola, it's damn.
You can't make it up.
You can't make it up.
Hey, now here's a bigger question. You do all that, and on top of that, you have Silvio D'Souza that was accused. Now, some people saying that he got $60,000 from Maryland, and they had to pay the money back for him to go to Kansas. They're saying that he signed a contract at a professional team, but they checked had a handwriting specialist check and weren't sure if that was really his. So he continued to play, and then they also checked on like to me. Forget about even the coach. How can Kansas has to get some type of lack of institutional control, right?
I have no idea where this. I said, I'm telling you, I read this. Like, I don't know whether Jim Larrañaga is in trouble or he's not in trouble because it says Larrañaga will make a phone call. And then when Larrañaga made the phone call, I don't know if Tom Crean's in trouble. I don't know this because I got this guy saying Tom Crean gave me a hug. It's almost like if your name pops up in this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that means for you ultimately. I think ultimately, unless, Seth, I want your opinion more than my opinion on this. So I'm asking this as a question. You said this about Kansas. Ultimately, do they have to prove that Sean Miller knew about payments to Ayton for Sean Miller to have a problem?
Yeah, That's a really good question.
That's the question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think all these, because they're all accusations.
Yes.
And until they can prove, I think they have to figure out a way, if they have to figure out to connect the dots for sure, somehow, some way, because it can't be just pure speculation. That's not right. But let me ask you this. Of certain things keep on popping up, with certain schools, and it happens over and over and over and over and over and over, and over again. There's a behavior, and I'm not making any accusations on any schools. I'm just saying, but if a behavior happens over and over and over again, and accusations happen over and over again, you would think that those schools would be concerned at a major level because eventually something's going to happen, right? I mean,
how can you not?
I mean, let's put it this way. I don't think Mark Schlabaugh, when he started the whole thing, and I'm not, you know, like that story found him. He didn't find the story. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like all this stuff. I mean, so I think all these accusations, obviously they're going to have to, you know, your brother's an attorney, so you probably know this better than I do. Jackie G's just in year two, first semester. So I'm really, you know, yeah, not exactly a law school family, but the whole idea of a court case is you build up to a crescendo, I would think, so that the last thing that a jury hears is something that will be lasting.
Well,
and,
yes,
you know, punch him right in the eye. So I think that there's another 2 weeks left of this thing.
And this, then you have Chuck Person et al. Going on.
You've got two more full trials going on. Who knows what that brings out?
I'm totally with you. This is what I like. This is the frustrating part. Like, all right, how many times can the name Kansas come up before you actually look at your head coach and not make excuses for your head coach? How many times can the name Arizona come up before you look at your head coach? How many times? Like, you know what?
Well, that's what happened with Louisville.
I was going to say that. Don't you have to give Louisville a little credit here for saying, wait a second, we've had enough. Now, there were other things with Rick, right, that he was dumbfounded by. How can you be dumbfounded by everything that ever happened to you in your life? But that's a different story. Seth, don't you have to give Louisville a little bit of credit for saying we've had enough, we're moving on from all this crap?
Well, here's my thing. I think what happens, and this is, I just really believe this, and forget about even just pointing fingers at anyone, just in general, in society, in the world, when you see your name on the bottom line continually, whether it's on CNN, ESPN, ABC, any news outlet per se, if you see your name on the bottom line continually, that's never a good thing.
Yeah.
And eventually, someone higher up, a board of visitors, a board of regents, a board of whatever, you know, whether it's politically or whatever, eventually that creates an issue. I mean, and there's a cause and effect. And so, I mean, if, you know, the more you see your name on the bottom line, the more I think there becomes pressures to make change. And that's just real. I mean, I'm letting this thing play out. I mean, obviously the stuff that we're seeing is, I'm a little bit like you. Look, do people do things? Yeah. $150,000, $8,000 to play high school basketball, this to play, you know, like, let me ask you this. We talk about the college player being exploited. So now are the AU guys being exploited too?
I think that's all crap. The exploited thing is all crap. I don't care, you know, whatever. Seth, who's exploited here? Like, let me ask you a question. Is Brian Bowen exploited? He's a top 30 player. I ask, what's the top 10 player get? What's the top 10 to 20 player get? Right? Like, is exploited mean you get a boatload of money for your talent? Is that exploited?
I don't, because you don't have to find things. The agents' names haven't really come out yet. And
no,
the money managers haven't come out yet. And
that's
supposedly,
a great point.
They're the real players in this stuff now. Right?
Yeah. You know, I used to tell Coach Knight when he was always feeling good about ripping whoever, you know, the AD or the president. I used to say, Coach, they got egos too, man. And at some point, I've got to believe, I really do, Seth, at some point, what you said is absolutely right. Presidents go to cocktail parties, alumni functions. Hey, you know, I'm really getting tired of reading about our program. I just gave you $100,000. I'm really getting tired of reading about, you know, all this crap. The alumni, like, to me, Seth, and I'm totally naive, so forgive me. But I always wonder, where is the faculty in this? You know, faculty have egos too, and they want to say, I teach at Michigan, right? Well, if you teach at Kansas, like, what the hell are you? Just another guy that lets crap go on? And it diminishes the faculty as well. I always thought that faculty rises up against a lot of things on campus. Why wouldn't faculty rise up against... We work here, too. We're tired of reading about the quote-unquote front door to our university being a hellhole. Is that way too naive?
No, I think that that's what happens. I think that what you said about cocktail party, what you said about major donors, major corporations, they see that this enough. I mean, these are the people that basically make universities thrive. Those private donations, 100%. And then faculty, obviously, who's not making we're talking about more money being paid to some players than faculty members are making.
Right.
Sure, there's no doubt about it. Eventually, there's going to be some type of reaction from faculty.
They're a strong group on campus.
Very much so. And a supportive group of each other. Now, obviously, there are faculty that are tremendously supportive of athletics. We've all had that. But there are also faculty that basically despise and think that the university's mission is not in that direction. So, but I would say that, that's where, again, the bottom line thing. Someone's name comes up on the bottom line enough times, there's an issue. I'm putting it simplistically, but, using the bottom line as kind of the platform and the canvas. But you come up on a bottom line and it's crazy. And I will say one thing about, and this is way off. How much should players get at university, this and that? I'll tell you what players are getting now. And I think listeners need to understand whether you think they need to get paid. First of all, a major corporation is not going to invest in a player with the concern that they might be involved in a scandal of any kind. All right. They're not going to risk their reputation. Now, will a rogue booster say, I'm going to give a guy money if that becomes legal? And say he's working for me? Yeah, probably, because, that's totally different. But when people talk about using likeness, how many college athletes would have an opportunity to have their likeness used to make big money, and how many people would risk that? So that's number one. Just that's at least my belief. Number two, players' housing's paid for. They're getting their meals for free, but they're getting their board's money in a check, basically, today. They're getting cost of attendance. Players that are qualify are getting Pell Grant. They're getting summer school Pell and summer school cost of attendance, and maybe even work in a coach's camp during the summer. I've talked to a number of coaches this fall. Their players are before not having to pay tax-free money between $12,000 and $20,000. All right, with everything else being paid for, housing, their meals basically, their health care, traveling on charter planes, not bags fly through like the G League, being coached, being marketed, massage therapists, nutritionists, and anything else that they could use. They're not paying for the trainers that are working them out, because we know all these kids have trainers now that eventually want to get paid, because all the NBA guys have trainers, all right, and they pay those guys. So, to me, being a college athlete, you can go to school. Like I heard something on The Jump the other day where they were talking about, no one goes to school. No, guys go to school. No one has time to do it. No, guys have time to do it. Is it hard? Yeah, because you love basketball. You're in the gym. You're working on your game. You want to be in there. It's fun. You want to have a good team. It's like almost like they made it sound like college coaches and the college enterprises stopping guys from getting an education. That's just not true. That's just not true. So there are a lot of, can you do potentially have fine ways to do more? Yeah. But let's not fool ourselves. There's an unbelievable experience and these players have it pretty good, really good. And we lose track of that, I think.
Whatever you're reading about whether or not this is fair, whether it's overreach, I love talking to the legal community because they're so right on it. Dan Wetzel wrote the feds rarely lose, and Jim Gatto's attorney is really bad and all this kind of stuff. And, but 2 weeks into this trial, the federal trial, not guilty verdict remains very possible. This remains a wild but weak case. That's Dan Wetzel, right? Well, an attorney's reaction, Freddie Vann, who's one of the preeminent defense attorneys in the Midwest, certainly among the best in Indiana, writes, he's right. The feds rarely lose. It doesn't matter if he thinks the case is weak. All that matters is what the jury thinks. So guys can say this is, well, it's overreach. Or guys can say it's a weak case. Sure, it might be. But this is a case that is going to be decided by a jury, not by Twitter opinions like we do in what you just talked about, Seth. This is simply about a jury deciding to convict, a jury deciding to acquit. Period. Everything else is crap and grandstanding. That's it. Because that's where, Seth, we're not in the court of the NCAA here. We're in the federal court where if they say guilty many times, you get slapped with handcuffs and it's adios. So doesn't matter what the posturing is at all.
It does have something to do with, I was thinking, the defense saying that, wait a second, these guys were ineligible before we even approached them.
Right.
You know, and these guys were no longer, we're not defrauding the universities. We're helping the universities, and we're helping these universities on these handshake agreements that, you really like these players. But even before they got to your school, these guys were all basically no longer amateurs. I mean, so it's going to be interesting.
Right. But the great thing about the jury's going to decide that regardless of anybody in the media posturing.
Yeah. 100%. And you know what's the great thing about this, B Squared, is?
Yes.
We're going to have two podcasts this week. And after that, America gets to listen to us once a week. And we're going to have our second one coming up. We're going to have a couple of coaches join us, maybe get some insights from them. And the great thing about it is it's time for basketball because we're weeks away from the start of the season, Champions Classic and Feast Week and everything else. And it's, despite everything, the one thing, and we learned this last year when this mm-hmm. the first thing happened, the games never disappoint.
Right.
The games are always the story. And to me, that's what the listeners have a chance to do is listen to us talk about hopefully more of the games and less the other things surrounding basketball. And hopefully people will listen and download it. Then Dr. Seth Greenberg, how can you not like us? You know what I mean?
I do. Oh, man.
Oh, man, you're the best.
I'll talk to you.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.